Okay, we want to welcome everyone to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We are one of about two dozen around the world. We are here to spread, broadcast the teachings of Theosophy. And before we give the announcements, we'd like to read the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as Theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by studying otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true Theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So before, we just want to make a general announcement that we will not be here on Sundays in the month of August. We will be here Wednesday nights with our study in the Bhagavad Gita, and we will return to our study of the light on the path the first Sunday in September. And then we will finish the light on the path in September, and then we start our fall, winter, spring schedule of The Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. So we have activities here during the lodge, except for August, twice a week we meet, and the doors open on Wednesday at 5:15. We have a library, it's a reference library. There's a librarian there if you have any questions. We study the part for the evening. Those who choose to avail themselves of the library prior to class, of course, you don't have to come here to study. You can study wherever, especially in today's world. But it's available for you, and we have Straight Line Theosophical Works and other works. So check it out. And then on Sundays, the doors open at 10:30. The meeting begins promptly at 11 and ends promptly at 12. And also we should mention the meeting on Wednesday after the library closes at 7:15. The meeting begins at 7:30 and ends at 8:30. And the book table is open before and after every meeting. If you should want to volunteer, you can see the person at the book table. There's you know, it's strictly strictly voluntary, of course. There's no coercion involved. But if you would like to volunteer, you can talk to the person at the book table. Now, all of our efforts are through voluntary contributions of time, money, and service. All are needed, but none are required. But, you know, we do want to try to keep the doors open here. So your contributions are welcome and needed. Anything, it doesn't matter how, you know, what it is. You can either make a contribution at the book table, where there's a little box right past the fireplace on the cabinets that hold the periodicals, or not periodicals, pamphlets, that hold the pamphlets. So we are, we have an old light on the path which has a different different page numbers. So if you have the handout though, we're not sure exactly which page that we're starting on.
17.
Page 17? Okay. Well, anyway, if you have the pamphlet, then you have the part.
No, it's not 17.
No? Well, does everyone have a pamphlet?
27.
Does everyone have a handout?
27.
Okay, then you're good. You're good. All right, so at this time, we're going to have the part summarized for the day.
Today seems to focus on how to read Light on the Path, and also she's focusing at one point, she's going back and looking at the four truths that are mentioned in the beginning, and then what is needed in the form in order to understand and be able to inculcate into your knowledge base the ideas that are in the part for today. And it starts out by saying that those who believe it to be written in ordinary English is wrong. It's, one can't understand the true behind the words if one is just thinking that they're reading it in ordinary English. It says, be warned and read but a little in this way. And it's not, there's a saying that, you know, read between the lines, but what is being said here is read between the words. So there is a little more involved with really understanding Light on the Path. And the adepts use this method of reading in life and knowledge as well. And they are able to hide some of the inner meanings of these ideas by making it so that people would have to use their inner language in order to understand it. And it goes on to say that man shall read these mysteries for himself. So it is something that one needs to read and meditate on. And we hear in theosophy self-induced, self-devised means. And we think that this definitely goes along, reading Light on the Path, trying to understand what is meant by reading between the words, not reading between the lines. So then the part focuses on, for the next few paragraphs, on the four truths that are written on the first page of Light on the Path. And I'll read them, they're short, if you don't have the book. Number one is kill out ambition. Number two, kill out desire of life. Number three, kill out desire of comfort. And number four is work as those who are ambitious. Respect life as those do who desire it. So it is necessary then to understand these four in order to gain entrance and understand occultism. And there's a mention a few times on the Gates of Gold. And for those new people, there is a book, The Gates of Gold. Is that just The Gates of Gold?
Yeah, Through the Gates of Gold.
Through the Gates of Gold. Thank you. But we're not really told here what the Gates of Gold really are, but we're thinking that it's like the highest form of knowledge, and that man can be considered to be a high form of knowledge. And man passes through these Gates of Gold to understand occultism when he casts off his own limitations. And those who are able to pass through these gates discover, that is said here, the sublime and illimitable beyond. And light on these four truths that are on the first page of Light on the Path are considered to be a trial initiation for the would-be occultist. And until he has passed this initiation, he cannot reach to the latch of the gates. So then we go on, and just the part focuses on science, what real science is. And it says here that science is a word which covers all forms of knowledge and does not really deal with matter, not even its subtlest and obscure forms, but it deals with everything. And in order to really understand science and nature, one needs to use their senses, but we're also talking about the astral senses. And these are considered to be subtle senses that lie within the physical senses. So it is these senses that we need to be able to cultivate in order to understand and read in between the words. And that the inner world is called astral. So these are the astral senses that we need to cultivate in order to understand Light on the Path. Then the part goes on to talk about how the whole of Light on the Path is written in an astral cipher. So that's why it's important to try and cultivate those inner senses in order to understand this. And then the part goes on to say, can only be deciphered by one who reads astrally. And by doing that, it also helps to strengthen one's intuition. So we'll just end with the last paragraph. It talks about all the rules contained in Light on the Path are written for all disciples, but only for disciples, those who take knowledge. To none else but the student in the school are its laws of any use or interest.
Well, that makes sense. If you're, the laws are for everyone, but if you don't take an interest, it's like they don't exist. And so Light on the Path is, it's one of the, well, it's one of the guides on the path, just as was mentioned, Through the Gates of Gold, which talks a lot about pain and suffering in one of the chapters. The Voice of the Silence, which is, you know, for students that are, it says it's written for the few, so it's for those that really want to read a mystical treatise and meditate on it on a daily basis. And of course, the Bhagavad Gita, which is the psychological, the Eastern psychological treatise par excellence that we have the good fortune to be studying in the summer. So it says it at one time, that time is a great deluder. And so we all think we have an unlimited amount of time, but really the time that we're allotted in each lifetime is relatively short. It's, you know, so we should get to work. Go ahead.
It may be relatively short, but in that short time, we generate enough thoughts and aspirations that it takes 1,000 to 1,500 years to digest them before we can come back.
Right.
So it isn't so short, it's just that we don't make good use of it.
We need to try to make the best use of our time. We can shorten that period in between lives by really examining our, before going to bed, examining our actions, our motives, our reactions throughout the day, and so that we can kind of digest that instead of being in a passive state for 1,000 to 1,500 years, which is the average. And we can see that in cycles, we can see that in historical cycles, that really does play out.
Yet the idea we think that's is that is whoever wrote this is trying to get across is something like, you know, you can eat the most nutritious vegetables that are going to keep you the most healthy in all the world, but if you only eat that much every day, it does nothing for you. That's the idea with what they're talking about in here. You got to make a decision, and you got to pack it in. Otherwise, you're not going to create the energy that requires. I mean, this book is talking about meeting the astral. That doesn't come. We're not claiming that we do, but it doesn't come by thinking about it a little bit over the years. You have to make a decision. So, and we have a question.
Sure.
If you know, HPB says that if you're talking to a theosophist, he's not an occultist. If a theosophist is not necessarily an occultist, but an occultist. ethicist, she says, better be a theosophist. What's the difference? What's the distinction, and why is she saying that?
Well, an occultist is a scientist, really, that's studying the laws of nature, the laws of self. And one can do it in a detached academic way without putting any of it into practice whatsoever. And that's really dangerous, because when the intellect is devoid of the Buddhi principle, the heart principle, that higher intuition, then it can be doing it all for self, all for lower self, all for, you know, say finding gold, like the or transmuting lead into gold, which the alchemist, on the one sense, there's the true alchemists were trying to transmute their own base self into higher, but the deluded ones were actually trying to make gold. So there was, and then there's a lot of, then they're attracting elementals to themselves, which are harmful to themselves and to others, because there's greed and avarice and all that involved. So an occultist had better be a theosophist, had better be a mystic, in order to have the right perspective. And doing it for the self of all, not just for one's own personal self and worldly advancement on the material plane. Yes?
It states that principles are based upon renunciation, you know, an act of renouncing the personal for, you know, for the universal. And that's the psychic plane. That's feeling. That's compassion. That's love. You know, that's cooperation. So that's the psychic plane. And that's how we build our intuition, by cooperation.
But that's the higher form of psychism that you're speaking about?
Yeah, well, that's what we all should be striving to do, to be the most universal, the most humane. You know, we know that everything is alive, everything is conscious. So everything, no matter how we think about it, how we act with it, how we interact, we affect all of life around us. We do everything. And it's not through our mind, but it's also through our heart. You know, that psychic feeling, like when you're around someone, you feel comfortable. You feel at ease. You feel open.
Yes, we're constantly broadcasting who we really are, who our real self is. And people can pick up on that. You can go into a room and you can feel very much at ease, or you can feel very guarded, depending on, you know, that's why we're warned about going into crowds, especially crowds that are, well, crowds in general, but
crowds that are in agreement with themselves.
Yeah, right.
That's everybody.
Yes. Yes.
Well, we were thinking, we don't usually realize we are occultists. How else could we walk into a room and sense that? It's not a physical thing. It's something we know inside ourselves. Or we meet someone, we've never seen them before, and we know we have a very strong connection. So we already live in our own occult world. We just don't stop and think about it. And the rest of the world doesn't either. They're very materialistic, usually.
Yes, well, certainly, if one has a familiarity with these ideas, there's study involved, and there's a method to the teachings. And so when we examine ourselves, and we examine other people's motives, would that be considered occultism? We think so. I mean, that's part of it. We may be in the, we've been reincarnating now as, you know, the light of Manus, which is our minds have been lit up for 18 million years. And during this time, we have, you know, lived thousands of lives, we imagine, or many hundreds at least. So we've experienced all experience, and we've been down different paths, and certainly studies, and, you know, we probably were involved with alchemy at one point, we would imagine, and various religious movements, and yes.
You asked examining the motives of others, and we don't think either an occultist or a theosophist would do that unless they were giving the other the benefit of the doubt. The way you know someone in your own family suddenly does something awful and you go, oh, I know he had problems at work. I understand he's just reaching out in anger. If we try to do that with others, to give them the benefit of the doubt, we don't need to examine their motives.
Okay, well, what we were thinking was is to examine what their motives are so that we can be of more help, that we could be of more service, not that we can, so that we can manipulate them. If we are manipulated, but our motives are pure, I mean, that's okay. That's just life. That's, you know, we all, yes.
The part talks about that it sounded as though you needed to be an occultist in order to truly understand light on the path, and the part talks about reading in between the words. So does that mean those of us that are here studying this today and the past few weeks, what are we going to get anything out of it if we are not real occultists and we're not truly understanding?
Well, we can't answer that because we would hope we would get something out of this light on the path, but it is written in an astral cipher, and it can be very confusing. It can seem to, I don't know, it can, we can't say how much anyone's getting out of it. We could be getting quite a lot, or they could be getting very little, but we would hope we're getting something from this study.
We would think that the psychic realm is the realm of the heart, and by reading it, there's a message there that you feel, and that the more you read it, the more you see it. It's like the Bhagavad Gita. The more you read it, the more you see, and it's just a level of really I call it initiation.
So, in a sense, it's an initiation into this knowledge. You know, there's a lot of rules that are very contradictory, but it would seem that, you know, we need to try all experience. We need to try all methods. You know, it tells us to kill out desire of life, desire of comfort, kill out ambition, but then it tells us to work as those who are ambitious, respect life as those who desire it, be happy as those who live for happiness. So there's a detachment here. We need to be detached from, we need to be in the world but not of it. We need to interact with our brothers and sisters, but not get caught up and the daily, the jog trot of existence.
Well, we think the very fact that we're all reading this and considering this and approaching these ideas does mean that we have a certain psychic recognition to it. It's the same with any idea. If you talk to me about ancient India, I might not be interested at all. You talk to me about ancient Egypt, I'm going to want to hear everything you have to say. What does it mean? It means that I have a stronger memory of incarnating in Egypt, and I want to remember some of what I learned. So we all have the ability to read between the lines, to read between the words, but we only do it when we want something out of it. So we are all occultists. We all see within the greater expression.
Yes.
We heard the terminology, right perception of existing things. Knowledge of. And if we want to have, make sure that what we, that we understand what we are looking at, we require some kind of light. In a dark room, you can't read it. So when we say light or impression, we're asked to think. How is it that such words as illumination, light, and right perception come into play?
Light on the path, right perception, how does it come into play? Well, light on the path is for all, because we're all on a path. And we will all apparently reach the goal at some time. But are we going to try to put it off, or are we going to try to get on the path now? Consciously. I mean, we're all on a path, but many are just living, just reacting to life and not acting through self-induced and self-devised methods.
In this room, these rooms, we hear strange sentences. The knowledge of the non-existent, perception, and so forth. But we've heard these words before, we never applied. Would you say that what we're learning is how to turn the light on?
Well, the light is within, so we need to look within, because it's there. Yes.
We think maybe not so much turn the light on, but maybe get the flame a little brighter, or turn a spark into a flame, or get an amber into a flame. Mm-hmm. On 34, that last paragraph, it basically says, all the rules contained in light on the path are for those who take knowledge. Could we investigate what is meant by the idea to take knowledge?
We could. So we'll think we'll put that out for the class, though. What is meant by to take knowledge? It says the kingdom of heaven is taken by violence. So we wonder if there's something in there about taking knowledge. Yes.
It's the great battle between the higher and the lower self.
Right.
It's the eternal battle.
In a sense, we have to turn that violence within, in a sense, against those parts of us which are rebelling, which we've built up over eons.
Well, it's the personal. You know, ever comes back to the personal idea.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the principles are all based on. Renunciation. Renounce everything. And it really comes down to one's personal viewpoint. You know, what, you know, just renounce, accept things as they are. And how are they? Do we really know? Or do we have such opinions or created illusions that we live by? So
we've created these illusions, and we may like them, we may feel comfortable with them, but there comes a point when they don't work anymore, they're not comfortable. We know that we need to change, but we could be lost.
Well, the word initiation was brought up, you know, once or twice in so far in reading this. And there was discussion about, you know, what is initiation, and, you know, it's an initiation into knowledge or something. But at the same time, nobody other than yourself can initiate oneself. Self-initiation is the reality. One either does the work to prepare oneself for initiation, and the natural outcome of it will be initiation under law. It's not dependent on some priest doing something to you or for you. So then take knowledge. You know, we hear so often well, take knowledge is, you know, it's like act, do something, go ahead and do it. And by taking that knowledge, we think that when or how or whatever initiation is, when it happens, the word knowledge is associated with it, but that doesn't mean you get smarter. That doesn't mean you know more after you were initiated than you did the minute you were initiated. Initiated into self, it means you have more power to do what you choose to do with your knowledge. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. We're not talking about final initiation when one becomes an adept or a Mahatma. It's a process. There's many initiations, and they're not like, they're not ceremonies. There's something there that we walk through, and all of a sudden we have a little more light, a little more knowledge, a little more power. And it's a series of progressive awakenings. In the back.
And we say, oh, I see, I get it. But back a little bit, it isn't just brightening the light from within, it's more getting rid of the rubble that we have created that blocks us from seeing it, that it's already there, and it's equal in all of us. But on the expression, take knowledge, one of the things HPB says early on is that if we really want to study this and know this, we have to take everything we think we know, in other words, our knowledge base, and question it just as much as we question the new that we're taking in. And that is self-initiation. And we get that I see, and we step a step forward, reaching to when the initiator will literally invoke a process that allows us to see at a different level that can't happen here on the physical plane.
In the back.
Well, still, we discovered that.
Could you speak up a little bit?
We discovered that all the knowledge and the manner of speaking and conversing that we came into this room with, we have to put back outside and learn a new language, even though the words are the same. But here they're given a different, shall we say, approach. And so by study, contemplation, and then checking things out, the comment was just made, oh, I see. We learn a new language, and we have to do that. In fact, on the first few pages of Light on the Path, they have to do what we have to do. I think it's in there.
Well, there's four rules that are unnumbered, which are the first,
yeah,
the first four,
yeah,
besides the four that I just read earlier.
Yeah.
Before the eyes can see, they must be incapable of tears. Before the ear can hear, it must have lost its sensitiveness. before the voice can speak in the presence of the masters, it must have lost its power to wound. And before the soul can stand in the presence of the masters, its feet must be washed in the blood of the heart, which is, you know, something to contemplate. So by losing sensitiveness, it's that has to do with the lower personal self, not sensitiveness towards others. We're supposed to be increasing that sensitiveness. But so we do. These are the first four steps. These are the first four rules. And losing the power to wound. I mean, that's something in today's world. Well, it's been this way for who knows how long. In order to raise ourselves up above others, we need to, in a sense, in the business world, battle and have a sharp tongue and be clever. And that's what the competitiveness, that's what we're taught in schools. That's what was inculcated. And even in religion too, many, won't say all, but a lot of that has seeped into religions as well. But we need to lose that. We need to lose that power to wound, because it's an awesome power. And it's something that is wielded far too often. Is that a follow-up?
Yes. Well, that is why the teacher recommends that we familiarize ourselves with those three fundamentals. She said that she puts it in the front of the room, and she said, familiarize. Well, the more we repeat it, the more we sit down and go to sleep on the room, then we begin to learn a new way of expressing ourselves in a language that's not different than our friends' views, but it has a deeper meaning. And then we begin to choose a proper wording when we speak. And it's not easy. Not easy.
No, it's a process that takes lifetimes. Go ahead.
Well, those unnumbered rules, perhaps what you're talking about, you know, before the eyes can see, they must be incapable of tears. So whatever it is that we see, we're not going to emotionally react. What we hear, the ears must have lost its sensitive. Whatever we hear, we're not going to emotionally react. We're not going to be moved by emotion. And don't we hear in this room like it's able to recognize everything as the operation of law?
Yes. What we meant was that, you know, if we see someone who needs help, we help.
Sure, yeah.
You know, it's not that we
participate. Sure.
We participate. We don't. You know, there's a lot of trouble in the world, of course, but we don't want to get mired in it, bogged down in it, because then we can't really be very helpful.
Yeah, and so, I mean, on the one, it sounds lofty. Before the voice can speak, it must have lost the power to wound in the presence of the master. But all that's really saying is you're in complete control of your emotions.
Yes, because right, you wouldn't want to wound your brother. You're wounding yourself, because we're all one. You know, we're all parts of the one whole, all rays of the divine. So when we wound somebody else, we're really wounding ourselves as well. Did you go ahead?
Well, it's the universal brotherhood in its truest sense. And all of life is alive. And because we are the most evolved in that life.
Yes.
In self-confidence, we have a greater responsibility.
Yes, and this period of evolution on this planet and this round and all the rounds, it's man is at the vanguard of evolution, and all the kingdoms below us are, in a sense, waiting on us to perfect ourselves, to raise up all matter, so that they are future men. all the animals, the plants, everything, everything that exists. Everything was, is, or will be at the man's stage. But we need to raise up nature, and because they're waiting, in a sense, they're waiting on us. Yes.
So that is evolution.
Everything
is cooperating and evolving to self-consciousness.
Yes, there's consciousnesses on every level. We are self-conscious, but we are learning to work within the law. We have free will, which gives us, we can work against the law with our free will, but that's how we learn, by making mistakes.
But the point is that we are creators. We are creating every day. You know, we're electric, our minds are electrodynamic generators of force.
Yes.
You know, that alone, you know, we have a presence. And, you know, and when we come to these rooms, we find that we also have a responsibility.
So we're all broadcasting all the time, and we are here to spread, broadcast the teachings of theosophy, is what our stated purpose is at the lodge.
But when we leave here, we have to take knowledge about ourselves. We can speak of universal brotherhood, but how much do we apply it? Do we apply it to the rude clerk at the store? Or do we behave in a different way? So we have to do the same thing that we did with ideas. Look at our own behavior and motives, judge it, fix it. Because otherwise, we're going along in a delusion. And that's why we've been doing this for 18 million years.
Right.
We're not stupid. We just like it the way it is right now.
Yes, if we react because we're hurt, our personal self is hurt, then we're losing an opportunity when someone is, you know, lashes out at us. If we can be calm and not react and perhaps return that with kindness, you know, we can really help. We can be of service. It's challenging. It's very challenging.
Well, you can understand as much of this intellectually as you want to. You have to come down to, you have to love thy neighbor. Very simple. I find it in all religions. And, you know, you have to be accepted, loving, respectful. You know, have a dignity to your life.
We have to be accepting, loving, kind, and show dignity towards others? That's a tall order, isn't it? No. With practice, it's not.
It's all an attitude of mind.
So that's what we need to do. And to always be aware. Awareness. Awareness is the key. And it becomes easier. It does, it becomes easier with practice. Yes. The world is in conflict. We've created this over 18 million years, and actually it carried over from a prior period of evolution on the moon chain, which we don't know much about, but we started where we left off in a sense. So we have that legacy as well. And we're here to clean up the astral, to clean up, it's the dregs, it's the slag pit, there's many levels to it. We need to go and work through the lower astral before we can start to be able to read the astral cipher, it says here. We need to clean that up.
Well,
yes?
Well, isn't it do unto others as you would have them do unto you? That simple expression.
That's the golden rule.
Yeah,
or, don't do to, I won't do to you what, if you won't do it to me, right? Well, sometimes it's written various different ways, but it is do unto others, show kindness,
what you would want from
and compassion,
else.
And everything you want
from someone else.
In the back?
We're reminded in the philosophy, especially in the Gita Notes, Chapter 2, that it's more than likely we're interested in these ideas because we have been initiated in the past, and that we're here to get rid of the defects that prevent us from knowing what we know, which is what attracts us to these ideas. We already know them, but we can't get through to them in ourselves because of things that we have created in the way. So if we could hold on to that bit of wisdom in any situation, I am better than this. I don't have to act like I always do. So these devotional books, if we could memorize a sentence or two and carry them with us at all times as ammunition.
And we're advised to watch our speech, to not just speak idly, not to engage in gossip, because that's does no one any good, and to think and speak kindly, act to do kindly acts.
On 34, it talks about until the first step has been taken in this development, and from what we can tell, that first step is gaining complete control of your desires, which is kind of a big step there. But until that happens, after that happens, only then will we have intuition with certainty. So in the meantime, a lot of times folks will think that, you know, they're intuiting something, which we probably are, but what's going on that makes it so uncertain?
Well, we think there's a difference between having a hunch, having an idea, and we may just
develop your tuition.
Right, using logically thinking that some event is going to occur. And to use a mundane example, we saw a movie about this man who bet against the market. He knew the market was going to crash, so he bet against it, which you can do in the stock market. He made an enormous fortune because he was able to see that it was a house of cards, where everybody else was, as they say, irrational exuberance. Everybody else was caught up in this irrational exuberance. Well, we're not to get caught up in that irrational exuberance of ideas and to look at things logically and factually and use our heart, not just listen to everybody, not listen to the talk on the street, to look within.
We were thinking maybe, you know, intuition versus intuition with certainty. The first kind of intuition, maybe it's that kind of intuition where it seems like the right thing to do, but maybe I'm actually putting my own stuff into it, and I just want it to be that way. You know, so there goes the desire again. Intuition without certainty can be mucky water. It might really be the intuitive, or it might be your own stuff.
Yes, we're here to raise the self by the self, which means to let the light of Buddhi shine on the higher manas and to the our lower desires, to keep them in check, and to use the lower manas, which we need to operate in this mundane world, to use it properly, not to get involved in the mire and the muck.
But again, to cultivate intuition, we have to use that same process. You have to trust. You don't have the certainty, but you have to trust the intuition, act on it, and then study it afterwards. If it wasn't right, find out what led you to have that kind of thinking. You've got to take knowledge in every aspect of your life. But we're supposed to cultivate dreaming, cultivate intuition, and cultivate altruism. If we just work on those three things, taking knowledge on them, we'll learn things about ourselves we don't even want to know.
Yeah, but that's what we need to know.
Yeah.
So cultivating dreaming, knowledge, intuition,
and altruism.
Dreaming, cultivating dreaming, intuition, and altruism. That's a great trinity there. That's it helps to keep a dream journal and to really examine our dreams from day to day.
And you remember an article in the teaching explaining nature's response once you begin to understand the aim and purpose. In my most beloved, he forsaketh me not, nor do I forsake him. Even if he were dead, he lives. Why? He worships at the sacrifice of knowledge. This is my result. Once we hear that, then humility takes over, and we're ready to listen, discuss, and maybe we might get a little brighter, but we must never assume we know. Nature takes care of that.
Well, we all have intuition to some degree or another, and it is something that can certainly always be cultivated. In the Key to Theosophy, it talks about altruism and charity, and that often charitable works are done without knowledge end up doing more harm than good. And so we need to have that knowledge of how to do good, how to do true goodness. In the meantime, whatever comes to us, we when it comes to us, it's ours, and we do whatever good we can. As we learn, we'll be able to do more universal good.
Don't forget that wonderful cartoon in the Funny Papers. When someone discovers something, that the cartoonist or the artist always painted a light bulb flashing over his head.
Well, that light bulb is an aha moment, which is a minor initiation. So, or maybe a major one. So we have come to the close of the hour and the end of the month, so hopefully we'll see you on Wednesday for the Bhagavad Gita, and our next Sunday class will be in The Light on the Path on the first Sunday of September. Have a good day.